Good evening. I'm your host, Aaron Rittmaster. Welcome to the Man Cave, where joining me tonight to record Diz Dad's podcast number 133 are David Platt.
Hello, everyone.
Kevin Crossman.
Aloha, everyone.
And David Matt.
Hey, folks.
Yeah, I did it to myself again. We've got the two Davids with the rhyming last names. I'll do my best to keep everybody straight. But tonight on the Diz Dads podcast, as you can tell, I've got the West Coast crew together because we're going to be continuing our land-by-land exploration of Disney's California Adventure. Tonight, we'll be continuing our tour with the discussion of Condor Flats, Grizzly Peak, Pacific Wharf, and Cars Land. But before we get to that discussion, I do want to once again thank our podcast sponsor, Fairytale Journeys, an authorized Disney travel planner. The next time you're considering a vacation on the Disney Cruise Line, at Walt Disney World, or at Disneyland, a Fairytale Journeys travel agent would be happy to help you put that vacation together. You can check out their website at fairytalejourneys.com. All right, guys. This is sort of the middle section, I guess is what we'll call it, of California Adventure. It's not laid out as quite a clean, you know, circle around a hub like Disneyland theme park is, but this is sort of an archipelago of lands that runs through sort of the middle at an angle through the middle of the park. And David, Matt, I'm going to ask you to start us off and kind of take us into the Condor Flats area. And it probably makes the most sense to have you take us to Condor Flats, you know, from Buena Vista Street, because that's probably the way that you're most likely going to enter it.
Okay. Yeah, when you kind of are probably first entering the park and traveling down Buena Vista Street, off to your right will be Condor Flats. You'll notice some buildings in the shape of airplane hangars. And off to your left is going to be some California wilderness-type desert area that's part of the Grizzly Peak part. But the primary attraction, and really the kind of only attraction, I think, in Condor Flats, is the Soaring Over California sort of movie experience, where you know, you'll basically get to go hang gliding through California. It's very similar to the Epcot version, complete with the orange grove smell.
And so, Kevin, you've also experienced both versions of Soarin'. Why don't you kind of take a stab at comparing the two for us?
Well, as David mentioned, they are very, very similar, especially once you get into the movie experience. The theming around the queue is a bit different. In this case, this is one of the original DCA attractions where they were trying to celebrate the history of California, and in this case, celebrate the history of California aviation. And so you'll see as you enter the queue a series of photos from some of the famous aviators of the past. And I will note, as a native Californian, this is a pride kind of thing. I like the fact that this is Soarin' Over California, not just Soarin'. And I want to put up my props to my favorite pre-show moment, which is a nice work, pal, from our buddy Patrick the pilot on this ride attraction.
Okay. Yeah, and, you know, the attractions are similar, but it seems to me that they've done a better job of maintaining the upkeep of Soarin' Over California. That's just the impression that I get from talking to people who've experienced both. David, Kevin, would you agree with that?
That is the rep.
Yeah, well, I would, and I think one of the things too is that since the land is kind of very much themed to the whole, you know, is I'd say a little bit more at home than say the Epcot version, where you know it fits in with the land, but it's not quite as elaborate of a theme, I'd say.
Yeah, that's true. I think that makes sense. It's more organic to the park, certainly. All right. Well, let's continue our tour. And
well, can I chime in real quick
with, sure.
One thing about Soarin' Over California
I
noticed last time?
David.
This is just a rumor that I've heard lately. I don't know if anybody's been on Soarin' Over California just recently. Within the past couple months, they've added some references to the movie Planes in the pre-show with Patrick Warburton. And so there's some speculation that they're going to retheme the whole land to be a Plains theme.
Yeah, so. I was there actually the first day when they had this by chance. And what they have in the when you're waiting in line to get into the theater, and they show the clouds and the names of the different geographies that you're going to go past, every now and again a character from the Plains movie will fly by. And did not please me one bit to see that.
No, I wasn't super thrilled with it either.
So that's it. Once you go into the show building, then you're okay. But yeah, it's not a good trend.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting to me that that's happening there. On the one hand, it seems to, you know, somewhat natural given what's happening at the sort of the opposite end of this stripe that we're talking about with Cars Land, and a lot of the sort of themed infrastructure is already there with the hangars and things. But on the other hand, the other rumor that seems to be hot and heavy about Soarin' is that when the new Shanghai Park comes online here in probably 2016 at some point, that, you know, everybody is likely to get an updated Soarin' film because there's a lot of rumor about, you know, Shanghai having a sort of a Soarin' more world-themed film. So
I'd say it's sorely needed. I mean, I love Soarin'. I would love to see an upgrade of the current film that's there because I love the ride. I love the film, but my gosh, it's in bad shape. I mean, it's blur. It looks to me like you're looking at a 3D movie without 3D glasses on.
You know, still a favorite even in Florida among my family. So I think we would enjoy seeing it in California just because, like I said, I think the upkeep has probably been more consistent there. Let's go ahead and continue our tour a bit and, you know, head northeast just a bit to Grizzly Peak.
All right. Well, I'll take that one.
Okay.
If you continue on through Condor Flats, you'll notice you leave the kind of industrialized feeling of all the airplane hangars, and it progressively gets a little more and more wooded, a little more foresty. And all of a sudden you turn the corner and you are in Grizzly Peak. You're surrounded by forest. Off to your left, you'll see one of the biggest rides in the park is Grizzly River Run. It has kind of an old 1800s mining town theme that fits in really well with the wooded area. And if you continue on to your right, you'll see the entrance to the Redwood Creek Challenge Trail, which is a great attraction where kids can just blow off steam for a couple hours. I kind of have always viewed it as the California Adventure analog to Tom Sawyer's Island, where kids can just go and play and hang out. Parents don't really have to follow them around too closely. It's just a place for the kids to explore. Once you get past the Challenge Trail, you head back out of Grizzly Peak over to other sections of the park.
Okay.
So it's not the biggest place, but it's to me, I think it's the prettiest area of California Adventure.
All right, and why don't you talk a little bit more about, you know, Grizzly Peak and obviously the Grizzly River Run attraction that's there.
You know, most amusement parks have a ride similar to this. It's a large, round, pontoon-style boat that sits about, I'd say, 15 people that you go through whitewater rapids. And you go, you know, there's some big drops where you potentially get very wet. And I mean very wet. It's a lot different from Splash Mountain. There are continual opportunities on this to get wet, not just the one big drop at the end. Depending on the time of the year, you'll get wetter than other times. They ramp it down a little bit in January and February because obviously the temperature isn't as high. They don't want people to run around in super wet clothes all day. But it's a good ride. If you're afraid of getting wet, you can always toss one of those little, you know, $1.50 rain ponchos you can find at Target or the dollar store in your backpack before you go. We always have a good supply of those in our backpack, and we're big chickens, and we don't get wet. And then when we come off the ride, we always pass them along to other people in line and our heroes for a little bit.
All right. Sounds good. And then, I don't know, Kevin, you were talking a little bit before we started recording about the Challenge Trail in this area being a favorite of yours.
Yeah, well, I have two boys. They're now 11 and 15, so our time in the challenge trail may be coming to an end a bit here. But they've always loved this area growing up, and as David mentioned, you know, being able to just run around, explore. They have slides, they have zip lines, they have rock climbing, they have sort of a rope system and netting that you can climb up. It's really a lot of fun. And then they have the show here with the characters from the movie Up, and it's kind of a cute little tiny theater, but you know, one of those get up and close with the characters and have a, you know, a good 10-minute little show, and I think it's very charming. And I'll second the note that this is a very beautiful portion of the park. In fact, one of the nice things is that there's a trail that you can go sort of behind the lift hill for the where the boats go up, and it's very pretty, very calm back there, and you can also then have good people watching as they're coming down the lift hill and getting soaked.
I'll also chime in that the Explorer area was really popular with my kids. They really love the zip line. One little caution is if you want to do the rock climbing, they need sneakers or something other than like sandals or flip-flops. So, you know, probably a good day to check your kids' footwear.
Yeah, that's a good point because, you know, my first gut reaction would be if we're going to ride, you know, Grizzly River Run, then flip-flops or you know, Crocs, something like that would be ideal because they dry quickly. But that doesn't mix well with the rock climbing right across the way.
Well, I think one of the key benefits here, if you are so have such the opportunity, is that this is the location in DCA where you can actually go from the park into the Grand California Hotel and to, you know, other parts of the other hotels for Disneyland Resort as well. So unlike, for example, Cali River Rapids in Animal Kingdom in Florida, if you get really soaked, you could go right back to your room and change if it's, you know, if you're staying there. So something to take advantage of with this particular attraction for sure.
Yeah, that is a good point. I'm glad you mentioned this is where that kind of back entrance into the park is, or more accurately, I guess, side entrance. But
yeah, side entrance, yep.
Oh, and one other nice little tip about Grizzly River Rapids that not too many people seem to know about is there are free lockers available just to the left. If you're staring at the ride straight on, there's a Disney Vacation Club kiosk. Just to the left, immediately behind that kiosk, there's a bank of lockers that are free for 2 hours. So you can put anything in there that you don't want to get wet, any cameras, iPhones, you know, what have you. And, yeah, keep them safe while you're on the ride.
That's a great tip.
And this ride also is one of the few rides that has a single rider line, which means on any day, even the hottest, longest line day, if you're a single rider, you can get on this ride with basically no wait. So if you're like me and you're the only one in the family who wants to ride, no line.
Almost makes you want to say, you know, oh, no, honey, you really don't want to do this. You'll just get soaked. That always makes you cranky.
Almost.
Yeah, one other thing about this part of the park is this is where they have the Fast Pass machines for kind of the preferred seating or preferred standing for World of Color. And those fast passes are decoupled, so you can just go, say, early in the morning, and the fast pass machines are basically right outside the Grizzly River Run entrance.
Another good point. We're going to talk in more detail about the World of Color show in the next episode of this series. But, David, I'm glad you mentioned that because that is a feature of the Grizzly Peak land that is probably almost as important as the attractions. Kevin, why don't you take us into Pacific Wharf, which is sort of an interesting little subland. I don't know that we've got a land at Disney World anywhere that's quite like this.
No, it's really kind of the crossroads of this park, and it was part of the old DCA, was what they called a district, and so it's not really a true land. I mean, there's one attraction, which is the Blue Sky Cellar, where they give you the preview of the upcoming Imagineering projects. So Of course, right now we're in sort of a lull where they haven't announced what the next big thing is at the resort, so this isn't exactly the most scintillating attraction. But certainly in the lead up to, you know, Cars Land and all that stuff, it was actually really nice. But for the most part, if you're going to be spending any time in Pacific Wharf, aside from going back and forth to some of the other lands, is you will be eating and or drinking, because this whole land is filled with a whole bunch of opportunities to eat and drink in two primary locations. First is the Golden Vine Winery, which has a sit-down restaurant. It has a kind of a loungy area. It's got some wine tasting and some walk-up wine tasting bars there. And it's very very well themed to sort of the California winery style. And then across the little river there, you've got the Pacific Wharf, which is set in sort of a Monterey style. And there's a whole bunch of counter service locations here where you can get Chinese food or Mexican food. There's a bakery. There's a Ghirardelli chocolate location. So lots of different food opportunities here in this area, along with beer and margaritas as well.
Yeah, you know, in some ways, I guess, it almost reminds me a little bit of that sort of, you know, for lack of a better term for it, that sort of Sunset Strip area along Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood Studios, where you've got, you know, a row of quick service locations. Although, frankly, they sound more appetizing than their Hollywood Studios brethren.
You know, that's probably a pretty good analogy for sure.
Okay. So does anybody have any particular favorites or tips about the various dining options there?
Yeah, I'll chime in that the Pacific Wharf Distribution Company, which is just a kind of a little stand, that has a whole bunch of craft beers. So you can get your IPAs, your wheat beers, and quite a really good selection. And, you know, I got to say, after a day of riding roller coasters, it was really nice.
Always on the lookout for a location to get a decent beer.
I'll just say one little tip. You know, the Ghirardelli location is pretty recently added to this park, and it's very typical to other Ghirardelli locations, both in Disney World or in San Francisco, other ways. So your ice creams, all your chocolates. And it does have that famous special attraction where you can go in the door and they hand you a little chocolate sample. And then you can, you know, browse the chocolate gift items or, you know, maybe a beverage or something like that. So if you want your free chocolate, you still have that available here as well.
Nothing like a free treat. We don't often say Disney and free in the same sentence.
Well, I was just going to add, I don't have a lot of experience with Pacific Wharf. I've never really eaten any place there, but I had to step away for a minute, so I don't know how much was mentioned about the Blue Sky Cellar, but that's something really not to be missed if you're a Disney fan. There's always some really cool stuff in there. Last time I went in, they had a whole mock-up of a scale model of Cars Land and a bunch of the production drawings for it. It was really something to see.
Yeah. I think that we're all just kind of waiting to see what's going to be next. I don't know, we've gotten finally a release of some preliminary design stuff, at least for the Avatar Land expansion of Animal Kingdom. So perhaps we'll start seeing some more, you know, 3D type renderings showing up all the way across the country at Blue Sky Cellars.
I will note also that there is actually technically another attraction here. There is the bakery tour, and it's kind of a little fun video with Rosie O'Donnell and I think Ryan Mockery from Whose Line Is It Anyway, and they talk to you about how they make sourdough bread, and you get a little sample at the end. It is okay. if you skip it, you don't need to feel guilty, but if you're looking for a little diversion, it's actually not a bad little five-minute tour.
Okay.
Right. And the soup with the bread bowls is really good.
Sorry. Yeah, one of the nice things here, we'll talk about it in our next land, is that you know, there is a close entrance here to Cars Land. So if you feel like you want to have this kind of food but in a different seating arrangement, it's actually pretty easy to walk your food over. So like I said, there's lots of different options here in these restaurants here in the Pacific Wharf area.
Okay, so let's go ahead and figuratively walk on across into the biggest change to California Adventure, the one that's getting everybody's attention, and that is the addition of Cars Land. Who wants to take a stab at sort of giving us a firsthand description of that entrance into Cars Land from the Pacific Wharf side first?
Well, I'll go ahead and do that since we're over here. And it's actually interesting. Everyone sort of expects that the best way to come into Cars Land is down Route 66, right off the sort of main parade route. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with going that way. You get a great view of the town. But honestly, the thing that I think was most unexpected about Cars Land was not that they themed stuff around the movie, some of which, you know, some people really loved the movie and some people sort of neutral or some people, you know, didn't really love it. But everyone is impressed by the rock work that they have here. And when you come in through this, you know, rock stone archway from the Pacific Wharf and get this sort of all of a sudden a great grand view of these Cadillac mountain range, it's really, really spectacular. It's a little bit like when you go to Disneyland and you go underneath the train station and then you come into Town Square, that sort of, you know, sort of the curtains widen and then now you get to see this great view. And so, you know, it takes you there and you get to see that Radiator Springs Racers ride as you come in that side route. And it's really spectacular just to look at, much less to participate in.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, as you started to say that, as soon as you said, you know, coming through that rockwork arch, I immediately flashed on, you know, coming through the entrance there at Disneyland and going underneath the, you know, going through underneath the train station and that whole idea of having a cinematic reveal as you walk through. Now, we should remind people, though, that, as you said, there's more than one entrance, really, to Cars Land. There is this cinematic reveal from the Pacific Wharf side, but there you can also get to Cars Land through sort of the other side, which would take you through sort of the Bugs Land area. And the reason it's important to mention that entrance as well is that it's through the Bugs Land area that you're going to find the Fast Pass machines for Radiator Springs Racer, which is sort of the signature attraction of Cars Land.
But it is not where you'll find the end of the Fast Pass line for Radiator Springs Racers, which by the time they start giving out Fast Passes is probably going to be somewhere well back into the Hollywood backlot area over by the animation building. It's quite an impressive line.
And it hasn't gotten any shorter either. It's still super long every day.
Yep, it moves very fast from what I hear. I've never actually stood in it, but it can be daunting to look at.
Well, I was going to say it is a little bit of a mystery, at least to me, in that if you get to the park early, I would think you're just better off going on the ride itself and then hitting the Fast Pass once you get off.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't understand. I've seen people get in line for the Fast Pass right when the early magic hour starts. And why not, like you just said, walk over to the ride? Maybe it'll be a 20, 30-minute wait by then. But you'd still be ahead getting to ride the ride once, walking to the end of that Fast Pass line. You'll probably get a Fast Pass for late in the day, but you'd get to ride it again without a doubt.
Yeah, I'll give you a couple of reasons why we've waited in line. One of which was before they started enforcing Fast Pass, it was nice to hold that Fast Pass until you could ride at night. Unfortunately, we can't do that anymore because now they're enforcing the Fast Pass rules. Oh well. One of the things that we've done when we arrive, not during an extra magic hours, but during the regular park open, is I'll get to the park super early, so I'm more or less to the front of that Fast Pass standby wait line. My family can come in afterwards and not have to rush to the park like I do. And then I hold everyone's Fast Passes. They can ride Soarin' or some other ride a rope drop, and then I can meet them afterwards. So, you know, I don't disagree that if you want to, you know, fight this giant crowd, and at the end of the day, you will probably wait for not very much longer than you end up waiting in the Fast Pass. But that's the way we do it anyway. And I'll just say, Radiator Springs Racers, everything they say is true. It's one of the best Disney attractions anywhere. I visited parks on both U.S., all the parks in America and in Paris, and it is really in the top five really, really great attractions with thrills, as well as all the characters and immersive theming.
Well, why don't you go ahead and describe a little bit, you know, the attraction itself, because for those of us who, you know, haven't had a chance to experience it and really know the Disney World attractions better, you know, we hear that it's the same ride system as Test Track, but it's not really the same ride. So, you know, help us out here.
Well, sure. So as if you know anything about Cars Land, the idea is that you're walking down in this town, Radiator Springs, like they do in the movie. And then you kind of go around the corner once you hit the end of the street. And it's they've sort of built a backstory around this mountain area. And this was the original place where the Radiator Springs town sort of sprung from. And as you go into the queue, you'll see the actual spring that was in there. And there's rock work that looks like cars and things like that. And what you end up doing on the ride is you get to ride in a car and you drive through these mountains and then you drive basically into the mountain and you experience the whole story of Cars Land kind of, you know, through the eyes of, you know, the main character, Lightning McQueen. So you see, you know, some of the scenes from the film, like driving through the corn or, you know, tipping cows. And then you get to actually drive through a little miniature version of the town and see some of the characters. And then at the as you go through there, you'll see that you'll end up sitting next to another group of people in their own car. And then you will race them through this thrilling twisty turns and ups and downs through the mountains at the end. And one of you will win and one of you will lose. But that's half the fun. And it's true. It's based on the Test Track ride system. And while you don't go as fast, because you have twists and turns and ups and downs, I think it's a lot more thrilling and a lot more fun.
So it's really a blend of this dark ride segment first, and then it concludes with the sort of more thrill ride element.
Yep.
And the dark ride segment, the animatronics are just out of this world. I mean, they really hit it out of the park with that. They look like characters in the movie brought to life. They did an amazing job.
That's the big signature attraction, and so we talk about that one first. That's the one that draws the big crowd, the lines. This is another attraction that has a single rider line. So, you know, again, if this is something that you know, maybe you've got younger kids who don't hit the height requirement yet or something like that, I can't imagine people not wanting to ride. But if you happen to be there solo or, you know, you've got kids who aren't tall enough, whatever, single rider line, it's another opportunity to maybe cut down on the amount of time you spend waiting. In addition to, you know, Radiator Springs Racers, the big signature attraction, you've also got a couple of maybe smaller or less storied attractions, you know, not quite e-ticket thrill ride attractions. You've got Mater's Junkyard Jamboree and Luigi's Flying Tires. So who wants to give us a description of Mater's Jamboree?
Well, I'll take that one. It okay. is a spinning ride kind of along the lines of the teacups at Disneyland. But there's an added element to it in that you're actually riding. Let me see if I can describe this in any logical way. You're actually riding in a trailer being towed behind a tractor. So the tractor is spinning and the trailer is whipping you around at the same time. I'm making it sound much more violent than it is. It's really not. It's no more like motion sickness inducing than the teacups. But it's a lot of fun. Half the fun of this ride is waiting in the queue because of the great voiceover work from Larry the Cable Guy. They got him to come in and record a bunch of original songs, original material to be played in the queue. And it's just a lot of fun overall. Big hit with kids and the whole family.
Okay. And Luigi's Flying Tires is probably the source of the most controversy in the land. I don't know. Nope. David, Matt, you want to talk about it?
I'll take that one. Sure. Yeah. Okay. It's a combination of kind of hovercrafts and bumper cars where you've got a vehicle that's going to hold 2 to 3 people, and it's probably 8 feet in diameter. Looks kind of like a child's swimming pool that you might blow up for like really, really little kids. And anyways, once the vehicle rises up, you kind of control it by shifting your weight around, and you'll go kind of scooting around this large area, bumping into the other hovercraft bumper cars.
Okay. And I don't know, David Platt, what's been your experience with Luigi's?
Well, a lot of people really don't like this ride. I kind of enjoy it. I think it's fun. I never got to ride it with the legendary beach balls. I don't know if any if David or Kevin did. But apparently when the ride first opened, when Cars Land first opened, the legend is that they decided the ride wasn't exciting enough. So they just threw a bunch of multicolored beach balls in with the ride so you could not only, you know, try to ram into each other, similar to bumper cars, but you could also throw beach balls at each other. But the balls just caused so many problems with it, increased the load times dramatically because people were just trying to get the balls and yada, yada, yada. So they took them out after a couple months, I think. And, you know, people complained about the balls, but now they're complaining they're gone. So I don't know what's up with that. But I enjoy it. It's a fun spin on a typical bumper car ride. I call it a giant air hockey game. That's basically what it's like. You're controlling the air hockey puck by riding on it and shifting your weight.
Okay.
But it's fun.
So, Kevin, you rode it with the beach balls.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, it's a lot more fun without the beach balls because you can actually concentrate on trying to move your tire around instead of constantly either ducking or trying to get a ball. And I don't know. I think this is a load of fun. And I just see people having a blast. And maybe it's that sort of Disneyland annual pass holder, frequent visitors who actually kind of finally gotten the hang of this ride. And that's why there's now actually a lot more movement by a lot of people when they come on this ride and not just stuck in one place. So, you know, I wouldn't wait an hour for this ride, but if it's 15 or 20 minutes, it can be a lot of fun.
All right. So that is the big complaint, that it's this hovercraft that doesn't have an obvious, you know, control mechanism. It doesn't have, there's no steering wheel, there's no control stick. The movement of your ride vehicle is completely based on essentially balance, you know, how you shift your weight in the vehicle. And so, you know, the complaints that you hear most frequently are, well, we got on it, we waited in line, and we finally got on it, and then it just stayed there. And we kind of went in a little circle for a little bit, you know, because people couldn't get a handle on how to maneuver their saucer. So you guys who have done this, who enjoyed it, who had good experiences with it, what are the big tips for, you know, getting a good ride on the Flying Tires?
I'd say don't lean too far. If you lean too far over, or if everybody in your car leans, you know, the same direction too far, you're going to bottom out and you're not going to go anywhere. And it'll take you a while to get any momentum going. Just, you know, take it easy. Okay. Take a minute or two to figure it out.
Okay. Any other tips, Kevin?
Lean in the same direction usually helps. I've also heard that sometimes it's easier to control when you're a single rider versus a couple people. So, you know, maybe that goes in line with that you're all, you know where you want to head, but maybe that weight distribution is a factor as well.
Okay.
Or if you have skinny kids that you easily outweigh, and, you know, I would chime in with if you do want to ride it, getting to it really early is a good idea because it does, it's got very low capacity and it gets really crowded.
Yeah, it's a very slow loading ride.
All right. Yeah, so it's a good point. So it's a good one to get knocked out early, maybe while you're waiting for your Radiator Springs, you know, return time to come up. All right. And, you know, from the time it opened, there's been a lot of attention on the dining options at Cars Land as well. They're very well themed and were pretty well received from the outset. I think the one that maybe impressed people the most initially, just because it was such a different concept and the design was sort of high concept design, was the Cozy Cone Motel. So, who wants to tackle an explanation of the Cozy Cone Motel dining options?
Well, there's five or six different, basically, large construction cones that each serve different items, and they all have a cone theme. So at one spot, there'll be like ice cream cones. Another spot has popcorn, and then probably the most popular item, at least that I ran into, was the churros, which I'm not sure how that really fits in with the cone theme, but it works.
Well, the key is that they're all served in cones as well. Yes?
Yes. Yes. The buildings are basically shaped as, large construction cones, and they're essentially just large enough to be walk-up snack areas, and then there's tables and such around there where you can sit.
Well, but the serving vessels are also cones. Yes?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Yeah, the drinks are all served in, like, miniature traffic cones, the things like popcorn, the chili con queso cone is served in a flatbread wrapped up in a cone shape. So, yeah, everything is served in a cone shape. It's an interesting theme.
Chili con queso.
That's right.
Oh, excuse cone. Me. I can't believe I mispronounced that.
And popcorn.
And that is my favorite. And that's my favorite thing there,
popcorn.
Too. It's really yummy.
Okay, and they have soft serve ice cream here, too, as well.
All right, so the David Platt, your advice is to get the chili?
Yeah, it's really good. That's actually one of the only things I've eaten there, but I really enjoyed it.
Okay, and any other highlights there?
All the stuff here is really good. The ice cream's really good. The popcorn, they have buttered popcorn every day, and then they have an alternate flavor that they rotate every day. So there's a dill pickle, sweet and sour, something like that. So, if you're on a multi-day visit to the resort, you might want to come by here every day and see what they've got available.
Okay. All right. Well, and then the other, sort of deeply themed dining option is Flo's V8 Cafe. And I know when I first saw it, I thought this was probably going to be a table service, but it's not. It's a counter service restaurant with a really nice theme of sort of the classic, 1950s, 1960s diner. And I don't know, what have your, any of you have particular experiences with Flo's V8 Cafe you want to share?
I've eaten at Flo's quite a few times. It's probably my favorite place to eat in the whole California Adventure Park. The theming is beautiful, like you said. It's good food for the price. You get really 50s diner staples. You have like roast beef with mashed potatoes. They have a couple of really good salad options. You can get roast turkey with gravy. A couple of good kids meals that you can get served actually in a Lightning McQueen souvenir keepsake, which is hugely popular, but then you have to lug it around the park with you all day, and it's not small. But one overlooked thing I think at Flo's that a lot of people don't get to do is the breakfast. They have a really good breakfast. They have a banana caramel French toast that I still think about. A lot of people just want to head straight for Radiator Springs Racers when they get there first thing in the morning. But if you have a chance, just check out Flo's for breakfast.
All right. Good tip. Kevin or David, Matt, either of you have particular tips about Flo's?
I'll note that one of the signature items here is that they serve these they're not quite bite-sized pies, but they're not quite a full-size pie either. It's sort of an individually sized pie. Really, really interesting pies, and the one I like is the apple cheddar, and they've got a couple that rotate through here, and they're really, really good. In fact, last time I was there, what I decided to do was order the kids' meal turkey sandwich, and then I had the pie, so I felt less guilty about the pie. They also serve shakes here, too. The one thing, it was a little bit of a disappointment for us, is that our kids, anyway, when they thought diner, they thought hamburgers, and if your kids set on a hamburger, this ain't the place, because, as David mentioned, it's more of that, carved meat, rotisserie meat type of thing. So just keep that in mind.
It is a little odd that the 50s diner doesn't serve a burger.
No, in fact, the only place you can buy a burger in this whole park is at the Taste Pilots Grill over in Condor Flats. And that's a good burger over there. It's a big, pretty, pretty big thick burger with a, you know, a really good Fixin's bar and everything. But I think they're just trying to get away from that sort of typical theme park food and try to avoid as much as they can the hot dogs and chicken nuggets and pretzel or pizza and stuff.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that you do get that sense of sort of a commitment to the California cuisine concept overall in the park. That takes us through, I think, you know, this whole stripe, really, that runs sort of from the northwest to the southeast within the park. But before we wrap up completely, I just want to kind of have everybody take a look overall at these areas that we've talked about, and maybe have each of you pick out one or two sort of, you know, piece of advice or not to miss things or, you know, heads up, you know, watch out about this, about any of these areas. So, I don't know, David, Matt, why don't you start us off with one, you know, thing that just we didn't talk about yet, but you want to make sure people know about these areas of California Adventure.
Well, with the Radiator Springs Racer Fast Pass, it is decoupled. So you can, if you do get that Fast Pass, you can still go and get Fast Passes for like Soaring or the Grizzly River Run. And you can also, in addition, get the World of Color seating Fast Pass. So you can have up to essentially three Fast Passes at any given time, as long as one's Radiator Springs and another is the World of Color.
Okay, that's an interesting tip. I didn't realize that was still not connected to the system. Good to know. All right, and Kevin, do you have a tip for us?
Yeah, well, I mentioned earlier, you know, there's the side entrance that comes out of the Grand Californian Hotel that comes in right by Grizzly Peak. And if you're staying there, it's a great way to come in and out of the park. I guess I'll give you two tips. One is, if you're staying in the hotel and you want to get into the park at rope drop, if it's, you know, not a early magic hours morning, you might actually get into the park faster by going to the main entrance and coming through here, because it can sometimes bottleneck. But it's worth noting that this exit is available even if you're just a regular park guest, because if you're over here in this section of the park, there are some dining options, some actually really good dining options at that hotel and, of course, into Downtown Disney. And if you're in the, you know, the afternoon, you want to go get a snack or something or have a drink at the bar, you can pop out into the hotel, go in there, do what you need to do, and they'll let you back in, because especially if you have your receipt as a, you know, a customer of that hotel, they should let you in the park, no problem, you know, get your hand stamped and all that. So all right. Keep that in mind.
Good point. Thanks. David Platt, any tips for us?
Yeah, I'd say mine would be particularly if you are a Photo Pass Plus user like we always are, take advantage of the Photo Pass photographers in Cars Land. There are some amazing photo opportunities in that place. And in this relatively small land, I'd say there are always no fewer than four photographers at various locations. And you can get some really great pictures, particularly in the spot Kevin was talking about earlier, the archway leading in from Pacific Wharf. It's, you know, I show people this picture, and they do not believe I'm in the middle of a theme park in Southern California. They think, you know, it's somewhere in Monument Valley or the Grand Canyon or something. It's something. So, yeah, look for the PhotoPass photographers. Take advantage of them.
Yeah, and PhotoPass Plus is a really good deal, because you get your on-ride photos as part of that deal.
Right.
So if you're Radiator Springs Racer, if you've got a whole family in your car, it's a great photo there too.
Yeah, and for those who are familiar with the Walt Disney World version of PhotoPass Plus, one of the nice things about the Disneyland version is that it's substantially less expensive, like nearly half as expensive.
Yeah, I think it's like the current price is either $60 or $70. And considering what you pay just for one ride picture, I mean, what is it, $15, I think, for the cheapest option?
Yep.
You know, it pays for itself extremely quickly. We always come home with at least 100, 150 pictures, which, you know, bought individually would have probably been over $1,000. And I do have one other tip, actually, I couldn't decide which one I wanted to do, so I'll just do both.
Sure.
Make sure to check out Cars Land at night, and if possible, be there at sunset. because there is a really cool little thing that happens right at sunset where they light up all the neon. It kind of goes from one end of the street to the other. They play the Shaboom song from the movie. It's just a really cool little experience. And you just ask a cast member during the day. They'll usually be able to tell you around what time it's happening. And it's really pretty to see.
Right. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. It's actually at dusk. So if you Google when is dusk tonight in my time zone, it's very close to that time. So yes, that's a really special event and definitely worth going out of your way to experience.
Well, guys, thank you very much. You've heard what we think about this part of Disney California Adventure. We'd love to hear from you and hear what your tips might be for getting the most out of California Adventure. You can email us at podcast@dizdads.com. Visit our blog, dizdads.com. Tweet us at dizdadspodcast on Twitter. And participate in the discussions in our forums at boards.dizdads.com. Until next time, I've been Aaron Rittmaster with David Platt.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Kevin Crossman.
Ciao, everyone.
And David Matt.
Night, everybody.
Brought to you by Fairy Tale Journeys, an authorized Disney travel planner. Let us help you put together your next magical Disney vacation. Find us at fairytalejourneys.com. Let us sweat the details so you don't have to.